Welcome to the Movers Resource Guide podcast, connecting you to the resources you need to create success. We chat with the best vendors, associations, mentors, movers, and more, giving you the information you need to make your moving company the best it can be. I'm your host, Brian Hassan, CEO of Wayfinder Moving in Buffalo, New York, and Apex Moving in Lakewood, Washington. Today, we have a really great episode. I'm excited to share it with you guys. I talk with Milo Milosevic, owner of Drive Sales, and we talk about outsourcing your sales department, offshoring it, the pros and cons, myths, all sorts of different things on that. I think it's a really interesting conversation. And then Milo goes into keys for a successful sales team. Knowing your metrics, your numbers, managing your people. Once again, I think it's a great conversation. Milo's a great guy. We have a lot of fun. I enjoyed the conversation. I hope you do too. So here we go. Here's my conversation with Milo. All right, Milo, super happy to have you here. How are you doing today?
Appreciate it, Brian. Appreciate you inviting me. I'm doing well, actually. But I'm actually doing well, not just saying that.
I mean, you know, for the beginning of March in the moving industry, that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, it's not terrible. So I'm doing well. It's been a little bit hectic last couple of weeks, but we managed to sort through a couple of things. But yeah, it's okay now.
Yeah, so obviously I've introduced you, but just give us a quick synopsis of Drive Sales. What do you do? How big are you? What have you got going on over there? Just to give people some background for the knowledge you're about to lay on us.
Oh, so do you want me just specifically to talk about Drive Sales, or do you want me to mention a little bit before I opened up Drive Sales 2 years ago?
Yeah, all of it. That would be great.
Yeah, so before opening Drive Sales, I actually was responsible for all the revenue at a company called Creator/Shift. They were dealing with video surveys, a couple other things. So I was responsible for revenue for X years I was there. Managed a very decently sized team. I had around 80 to 90 people report up to me. We're doing virtual sales. We're doing a bunch of stuff. Last 2 years I was there, we had around $35 million worth of revenue that went through me and my teams. And after that, I started my own company 2 years ago, where I saw a gap in the softwares that were out for movers, and as well as sales as a service and the quality of the sales that is available out there. So for outsourcing, not just specifically for people that have sales reps in the companies already.
So, and this is kind of why we brought you on, right? Really strong sales background, really successful salesperson, successful at leading salespeople. So you understand kind of that sales process. And additionally, being that you run this company offshore, allows us to talk about offshoring, the cost of that, the benefits of it. So all sorts of different things that we can get into here that I would consider you an expert on. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, I appreciate you calling me an expert. Not even my wife calls me an expert. So it's all good. At least someone.
Hey, you know. glad I could be a service. When we talk about that, I think a lot of people, and I've talked about this on previous podcasts about outsourcing or offshoring, and I think that, you know, especially as the moving industry is in a little bit of a retraction here, and we're all trying to reframe our overhead and make sure it's all working for us. And, you know, we've got to figure out successful ways to do that where we don't lose quality. We don't, you know, lower our booking percentages and things like that. So from your perspective, when you gain new customers or maybe people who haven't chosen to outsource before, what are the reasons why they may want to come to you and start doing that?
So it really depends on the company and where they are in their process of growing or generating business. So it could be turbulence internally for resources that have for headcount, or they just want to have to try something new, because there's obviously a cost difference associated with offshoring, like we are in Belgrade, Serbia, versus hiring someone fully in, let's say, in Buffalo or Seattle or somewhere else, right? Yeah. And then there's a difference in terms of actual knowledge of sales. When you onboard a new person that's new to sales and new to the living industry, it comes with its own sets of challenges and issues versus potentially having someone that's outsourced, but they already have the knowledge and the skill set of booking moves for movers in the past. And then that basically removes the actual onboarding piece as much as possible, obviously, until they learn a little bit more about the company, about the processes and all that stuff. But it shortens the go-to, basically, time frame for that seller. Those are some of the things that could be beneficial. But there are some negative drawbacks as well if people are looking to outsource as well. I can get into that as well.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a second too. And full disclosure for the listeners here, we are a customer of Drive Sales through our Seattle office. We have a very strong sales group here in Buffalo, and we do really well with it. So we're pretty feel good about how we're doing here. But in Seattle, we had to let somebody go, and we weren't really on site to train and implement another person the way we wanted to do it. We also had some overhead concerns where we wanted to reduce our costs there. And we had met you. And so for us through Apex, it was really controlling that overhead, getting those costs down, not necessarily really needing a full-time person to do the job. And wanted somebody who was actually better at closing sales and would get a higher closing percentage than what we were able to get through what we had access to at Apex at the time. Yeah. So, quick question. So for us, those are those reasons.
Let me just interrupt you and tell me, was it worth it trying it out?
Oh yeah. Okay. Cost perspective, it was something that really helped our overhead from that perspective. And I think from a quality of salesperson perspective, I certainly think we have a higher quality now on that. And there's so many other layers to that that I think we'll get throughout the podcast. But I'm certainly happy we've done it.
Thank you.
For sure. Yeah. Let's dive into some of those pros and cons on that, right? So it doesn't work for everybody necessarily. Yep. There's reasons to do it. There's reasons not to do it. And once again, as we have two companies, I have one company that I just don't really need the help or the service. Oh. And I have one company that desperately needed the help and the service. So from your perspective, what are the pros? What are the cons of outsourcing your sales?
So some of the pros we mentioned, right? Where it means cost, we mentioned potential quality. Doesn't necessarily mean that always the quality will be better, just to put that out there. Depending on the person or the people that you had in that company previously. But there's also a piece on the negative side that depending on where the company is at that stage, some people might not want to have someone outsourcing anything because people like to have people in the office. For example, I like to have people in the office, which we are in right now. So I get that piece. So they want to have full control over training, full control over a bunch of things that happen with that sales, how they're using their time in the office. And if they are vigilant in terms of following up and doing what they're saying that is being done on a daily basis, depending on if you have a CRM that tracks all that stuff or not. Sure. And then there's also a con, depending on whom you outsource to, in terms of accents, in terms of knowledge of pop culture, in terms of being able to have a conversation with a CLA customer, corporate customer, whatever, like they are from that region or they know a lot about the culture. So that's also a negative that people would perceive exists without giving it potentially a chance that it shows, it could be otherwise, but we can get into that in a sec.
Yeah. And I think that, I understand, I like having people around because it's part of it for me is I want to be around my team and I want to know what's going on and feel what's happening. And, if I'm going to have team members, I like having them around, right? You want to work with other people. But with sales though, especially if you choose to outsource it, the results speak for themselves. Either they're getting the results or they're not. And so, if I'm outsourcing somebody and I'm paying their a percentage to close or to book work or whatever, do we care if they're working all day as long as they're being productive? Like, does it really matter if they're working 15 hours or 30 hours or 50 hours, as long as they're closing at a high percentage and the quality of their work is good and all of those things? Like, some people care, but do we really need to?
I think it's a two-edged sword now. And like, in terms of how you discuss that stuff, right? So depending on the actual, let's say, if they're working 15 hours a week, whatever, and they're closing at the same clip that the team that you have is closing, then the conversation becomes, look, what happens if they actually work 40 hours a week? What happens if they work 60 hours a week? Versus, you know, oh, it's at the same rate, we're happy, do whatever. So there's a couple of different ways to view the same, basically, coin. And then it's just a matter of making sure that the time spent on these leads and these customers is optimal to what you have available to you. So,
yeah. And what's the ROI on that? So, you know, yeah, there might be a base cost, but then there's a percentage cost. And are they servicing all the leads you have? Hey, okay, maybe if they're not working enough, we can try to get more leads in or whatever else it is. But I think managing that ROI and making sure that investment in that salesperson is returning on itself. Do you need to have your thumb over them?
I don't necessarily think so. I'm a huge proponent of not micromanaging people. I'm a huge proponent of that, but also be there for them and then equip them with the tools and knowledge to be able to be successful in what they do. Because if you don't, then that's a big problem. If you're not micromanaging, but you didn't, and you have no knowledge or skills enough to like get to the next level in terms of booking, in terms of following up and whatever the scripting they have, it's a problem. So if, for example, I have a team fully trained and I'm happy with their performance in terms of how they deal with stuff, while I also am able to see what they're doing in terms of numbers, in terms of lead to booking ratios, quote to booking ratios.
Metrics are essential. If you're trusting your employees to do a good job and you're not micromanaging, I imagine those metrics and how you track all that and monitor it is essential.
Yeah. It is. Sure. It really is. Because sales is performance-based. Whatever you want to call it or not, it's performance-based. Either you deliver or you don't deliver. And it's easily seen in the pudding, so to speak. So,
Right. So we talked about a couple of pros and cons that layer into some, I guess, what I would call myths in outsourcing or offshoring, right? You know, you mentioned some of those of, you know, accents and cultural references and things like that. And, you know, we offshored, outsourced our marketing to somebody in South Africa. And it's been a phenomenal experience. I've talked about it before, which really opened my mind up to working with you and outsourcing our sales. Which has continued to open up my mind more to, you know, having a global workforce, right? So, but I think that going through that process, when we were assigned our salesperson, you know, not all that was true, you know? So let's talk about that. You know, not all salespeople, you know, yes, you might be in Serbia, but our salesman doesn't have an accent at all.
Yeah. For example, like if you listen to me speak, would you say I'm born and raised in Belgrade, Serbia? Probably not.
No. I mean, you definitely have a little bit of an accent, but you're not, it's very clear, right? We understand what you're saying and all of that. Right?
Which is key. And then the people that I generally employ that are within the company, majority of them have either some experience with the United States, whether that be going to college, whether that be working travel, whether that be whatever, right? Or working in, because there's a lot of call centers in Belgrade that are being outsourced for customer service, customer support, and all that stuff. And you're brought up with English as a second language, but from very early on. So a bunch of people have barely any accents in terms of how they speak and how they sound over the phone. And with the, let's say, globalization or whatever you want to call it, pop culture, and how it's being widespread with social media, access to information, what's happening is so easy. So that doesn't become, that's not a burden like it used to be, like 2000s, when you didn't have any social media type of stuff that you can educate yourself versus just being there.
And you know, and that's, you know, it's hopefully it's okay to say his name, but you know, Lucas spent, you know, I don't know. He went to college in the States and I want to say spent a couple more years here after that. If I might be wrong on that, but so his knowledge of the United States, his knowledge of pop culture, of the areas of this, all of that, you know, it's all there. You know, there's no accent there. And so for me, that was one of my biggest drawbacks about outsourcing sales, was I was concerned about that and how, I don't care personally, but how are my customers going to perceive that? Right. And I think I was surprised to find that it wasn't what I built up in my head. Right.
That's generally how it is, because we all have preconceived notions of what others will think of us or our company. And at the end of the day, no one cares. Like, no one actually cares, as long as they get the quality of the service that you say you're going to deliver, if they go with you in terms of booking. And then we can go into like the booking ratios and numbers and metrics, but at the end of the day is making sure that the customers are serviced and that the customers are happy with the service provided. So,
And I think that's probably key, right? Is that you have to be a good company. You have to provide a good service. You know, if you're having somebody foreign or maybe somebody with an accent trying to sell your product and you have a 2-star rating on Google, alarm bells probably going to be going off. But if you're highly rated, you're doing a good job, you're servicing your customers well, I think, you're right. People are probably not going to care.
Yeah, really in sales, people just, I just think they oversee the importance of the brand that they're selling. Versus, just selling. So, for example, let's say I get thrown into two different companies. One is from Florida, for example, at 2.5 stars from 50 reviews. The other one, let's say, is yours in Buffalo, right? Where I'm at 4.8, whatever the number is, out of X.
4.9. Reviews. Come on now.
So it's vastly different. Because people, when they call you or you have a lead that you bought, depending on the source, it's different when you say, hey, I'm with X and I'm with Y. And then adding on top of it is how you actually speak to that customer, how you convey the important pieces of the moving process. Are you actually helpful? It just has a lot of things that are tied into the success of one salesperson. That's not just, are they great salespeople? Like, it depends. Like, it's not easy to compare across the board. But if all things are equal, then there's a big difference in the actual quality of a sales rep.
I would agree with that for sure. All right, sir. We're about halfway through here, so it's time for our funny, crazy, interesting, moving story. So a little bit different from the sales perspective here. So what have you got queued up for us?
Oh, my God. So let me think. Okay, there's one move that we booked in the past. That was rather specific. So the total value of the move ended up being $160,000.
This is wild.
$160,000, one move. The move was booked through a virtual survey versus the,
even wrap my brain around doing a job that big virtually.
It all depends on the quality of the virtual survey that is performed by X person. So it's the same thing with a sales rep. If they know what they're doing, what they're looking for in the actual virtual survey, there's no difference at all versus unless you have to shake hands or smell the customer. But anyway.
So many directions we could go with that.
moving away.
So the first question in my head is $160,000. I can't even wrap my brain around what had to be in that house. How much stuff was it? What was the weight? What made it be so expensive?
Yeah. So the total weight. So I might be a little bit off on the total weight here.
Sure.
It's been a little bit ago. I might be off, but from my recollection, it was around 65,000 pounds. There were six high-end vehicles, including a Rolls, including a Bentley, including all that stuff, enclosed trailers, all that included protection, valuation, all that stuff. That almost every other item in the house was literally crazy. The value of the pieces that were in the house is ridiculous. Third-party services, crating. It was, I think, 14 bedrooms or 40 rooms of some sort.
It was a huge mansion.
Yeah, three sheds, garage. And the thing is, it was not, when you look at the stuff, it wasn't cluttered. It was very lovely organized in terms of the layout of the house. It was just filled with items, right?
Yeah.
But everything was very high end. So
and to get to 160,000 off of 65,000 pounds, you've got, I can't even imagine the crating bill, and there must have been a lot of high-end artwork and all that.
Majority was crating. Was crating on the third-party services. Everything that was touched, almost everything that was touched basically had to be dealt with special care. So it's not just like, it's a 65,000. And it's also a move that went cross-country. So it wasn't a local move. So there's a lot of things that came into play, and to make sure that it went smoothly, we had to be extra careful to make sure that all the bells and whistles were organized properly, so there's no surprises on any of the items being damaged, especially with the value of those items that were in the house. So it's just one of those things that's very, it's well a kind move that I've been involved with from in the last 10 years.
I would say that I would be willing to bet that 98% of the companies out there have never had to do a move that large. And we've done, we've done some, moves that are more than a full semi, nothing like that.
And the funny thing is, it was all done for Richard. The good thing is, knock on wood, so to speak, there wasn't an issue with the actual move.
Yeah,
because when everything was delivered, everything was done, there wasn't an issue. So I would say we're extremely lucky as well. So I'm going to throw that as well. Extremely lucky. Maybe they didn't complain because they didn't care. Something was off, but we didn't know. We didn't get any information that something was.
Any negative feedback. Anything was messed up or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, in a move that size with that much crating and that much. High-end stuff, that's probably a minor miracle there, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, a high-quality company doing the on-site.
Yes, that was key as well.
Yeah, for sure.
That's
interesting. On one hand, it's like, man, I'd love to get one of those right now. And on the other hand, it's like, really?
I need as well. This was a couple of years back. But I haven't.
I mean, came across I think our crews could do. I think our crews could do well with it. I think we could handle it. It'd be a lot of days, but it'd be a lot of stress you were there too.
No, you have to have someone on site. You have to do a bunch of stuff all the time. You have to be like white glove over white glove, and then a little bit of another white glove set. But we got lucky. We got super super lucky, and I'm grateful for it. But while that was happening, it wasn't fun as people would imagine. So
it's a lot of work, and you're earning the money you're getting, right? I appreciate the story. I think that's very interesting. So appreciate you giving that to us. So we'll move on to one of our final topics here. Moving moving away from the why outsource, the pros and cons, myths, all that stuff, into, hey, you've got a lot of experience in sales and virtual sales. So we tried here at Wayfinder to create a virtual moving sales team or a sales team in-house. I'm not a strong salesman. You know, I'm kind, I'm helpful. We have a great product. So we close really well because we're, you know, our leads are pretty good quality leads coming in, and we're kind and helpful, and we have a great reputation. So we do well because of that. But when I'm trying to set up a sales team to take on leads that are paid leads or leads from lead aggregators, pay-per-click, some of these other things that we had tried, which there's not a lot of in Buffalo. So there's almost nothing in Buffalo with those types of leads anyway. but generally speaking, those more competitive leads, we're not built to work those leads properly because we're not, I'm not, and I don't know how do I even identify a strong salesperson, right? So in that kind of environment. So I'm curious to hear, you know, what would you say are your keys to a successful sales team?
So there's a couple of things, right? And just to mention this, everything that I had ever sold in terms of moving, everything was done virtually. I have never, or my team has never stepped foot into anybody's home to sell a move. Everything was done virtually. Everything from virtual surveys through phone surveys, whatever, phone calls. Now, for you to be able to be effective with different types of leads, let's say paid leads, and then I'll just lump all of them together, regardless of the lead source, right? Mm-hmm. There has to be a very well organized process to make sure that you attack those leads. When I say organized process, I don't specifically mean, hey, call the person three times in 7 minutes, send them a text, send them an email. Those are all valid. Great. Stuff like that has to happen. You have to have, when you call, when you follow up, if they don't pick up, what happens then? If you leave a voicemail, what happens then? So it's always a has in the process of if, then. Like if, then, you always have to organize it that way. And then once you have that organized, it's actually the messaging that will potentially separate you from 4, 5, 7 different companies that you're going against on these paid leads. So, for example, if how does this sound? Hey, this is Milo. I'm with Apex Movers. I saw your inquiry online, and I'm just checking in to see if you need any help.
Sounds like something I would do.
So the point is, like voice, nothing will separate me from anybody that is calling. Then like there's nothing specific about me. Why do I stand out to, you know, that particular person I called? If you listen to voice, oh my God, it's these people are calling me, and it's not fun to deal with, especially if you have a terrible friend that puts your phone number in moving.com on purpose and you're not moving. Don't ask me how I know that. So there's a couple of things. Depending on what you say, how you say it, when you get the person on the phone is also key. You being kind, you being helpful can be a very different ballgame than people. Hey, look, just give me $100 deposit. I got you. Trust me, we're the best ever. Any moving company that you sell for, that I've sold for, that is selling, one of the things, it's now, Brian, correct me if I'm wrong. Would anybody sell, we have the best crew and we are the best that you can pick for your moving services?
Every mover I've ever met thinks that.
Exactly. Yeah. And then if I hear the same thing 5 times, you can't have 5 of the best ever. You're not going to have MJ Kobe. You're not going to have Shaquille call the same. Hey, look, pick me. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So it's just specifically how your messaging that goes with the brand that you're representing moves that customer towards, let's say, a finish line in terms of hopefully going with you. But there are a bunch of things that you can do in the meantime to differentiate yourself.
I'm gonna put you on the spot here. What would a better use Wayfinder, use Apex, use somebody else that you know? But what would be a better approach to set yourself apart in that first 10 seconds that you're on the phone or 15 seconds that you're on the phone with a customer?
So I'll just give a very random example. This is a very random example. I tend to be, I'm not sure if people have noticed watching this, I have a lot of self-deprecating jokes that I can use, right? It also depends on the personality of the sales rep, right? What they're comfortable with. For example, I'm very comfortable, I'm not sure if it's PG-13 or not, I'm very comfortable talking smack about myself in sales or whatever. It's like, let's say it's a Wednesday. Hey, Mr. and Mrs. Customer, this is Milo. Calling you because I have to on a Wednesday. Boss is going to yell at me. I saw that you're looking to move from A to B. So you can hang up on me like I've been hung up on 50 times a day. But you can, or you can roll the dice on me for the next 15 seconds and hear what we could potentially help you with. This is a long-winded intro. It shouldn't last this long in general. But here's just some idea of how potentially you can separate the initial phone call versus, hey, I got you, you're moving from A to B. Hey, let me take your inventory real quick. Because people want to feel they're connected with the person or they are, you know, at some level. I'm not saying what I just said is phenomenal, but I'm just giving a very broad example.
And to be fair, I put you on the spot.
Yeah, right? You're fine. Like, I don't mind that.
Take you out of rhythm here.
No, I don't mind it at all. But I'm just saying, like, for example, for me, similar type of stuff worked. But what I learned early on in managing sales is everything, for example, that I do might not work for everybody else in my team. So if I try to shove this down the throat of my sales team and they just don't have, they're not comfortable with doing it, I have to find a different way that person can make them stand out in a different way than, for example, the way that I do. So it's, you also have to know your salespeople to be able to establish that piece.
Yeah, absolutely. So one other thing we had talked about for, you know, making sure you run a successful team is, and we touched on it a little bit before, was the metrics, you know, knowing your numbers and making sure that you have measurables for them. So maybe get into a little bit of that here before we close out.
Yeah. So I'm going to try to make this brief. So knowing your numbers is extremely crucial. When someone tells me we close 90% of in-home surveys that we do, that's not true. That's unless they already have booked account. I can voice it. I don't own a moving company. I might be shot down for this, but generally that's not the truth. Being honest with the numbers that you have and making sure, for example, oh, I didn't book it because they're not qualified. And then you completely disregard that lead that you are in home and they just didn't pick you for whichever reason, right?
Yeah.
So being very meticulous with the numbers, when I say numbers, I mean leads coming in, then you can track every step of the sales process. New lead coming in, how many of those new leads turn into a scheduled appointment or a survey performed or a phone survey? Then from all of those leads, how many turn into quotes? From how many of those quotes turn into bookings? And then you can measure lead to booking ratios, lead to quote ratios. And then that way, you can easily see where your biggest drop off is. And you can then address the gaps in your actual system and see if there's any change needed. So you might be great at providing quotes, but then you see that your quote to booking ratio is, I'm just a random number out there, 15%. But everything else you're spot on, then that might be an issue with pricing. There is a lot of things that can be tracked, that should be tracked. Also, what should be tracked is from a survey perspective, if you're doing virtuals, if you're not, if you're doing homes, whatever, how many leads come in from different lead sources? And then how do those leads perform on different days? So, and how long should you be following up with people? You bought a lead from Quick Media or Billy.com or whichever lead provider.
Yeah.
do you follow up for 7 days? Do you follow up for 14 days? Do you follow up for 3 days or 2 days and then the lead is done? And how do you do that? You're able to get the numbers in the system from a lead coming in until the life cycle of that lead, until that lead is closed, lost, booked, whatever the final outcome is, you will be able to track across their lifespan what is your chance of doing something with that lead based on time lapsing. So there's a lot of things that you can track to be able to know how long you should follow up with different lead sources and how long and how effective, let's say, is how crucial your first day is versus your seventh day. If you close a 0.5% on your 15th day, don't follow up for 15 days. It's not worth it.
Yeah.
And you have to be optimal with the time spent on the opportunities that are actually valuable and have meaning to you. So.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. I actually took a couple of notes there, so I appreciate that. It's just some things. I was like, hey, wait, actually, we're not doing something here. We should probably think about that. Well, awesome. Hey, I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you very much for going through some of these things with us. I think it's valuable information. And so before we leave, though, you got Drive Sales up in the background. There's a couple of different things going on with that. And so, you know, and actually when we first met was more so on the software side. So tell me about the Drive Sales CRM real quick.
Yeah. So in terms of CRM, as I'm not sure if people could guess, I'm very sales focused generally.
Mm-hmm.
And when I used to manage a very big team, I built a software that I would want it to have at the previous company, so, because it's focused on making sure the sales process is optimized. So the CRM that we build obviously has a dispatching piece, has all that stuff, but it's heavily focused on booking new business and sales through making sure that you can organize your sales process however you see fit. You be able to track people through that sales process. You would be able to actually automate all of your follow-ups, emails differently from every stage that they are in. For every lead that's different, you're able to do virtuals from the software, obviously send quotes, specific different dates, all that good stuff. Yeah.
So it allows you to track all these metrics and, yes, and measurables that we just talked about.
Yeah, it does. And and it's a couple of clicks of a button. Also, we have a phone system integrated within it, texting, emailing, everything is in the software. So there's not, you don't have to wander around and implement different things. Everything will be in one place, from dispatch, from virtual selling, from whatever you might need. We are developing a couple of things as we speak right now. We also have like an AI piece where you can set when you want someone, when I say someone, I mean AI, to respond to your customers' messages if you're off. Questions like, do you create mirrors? When is the crew showing up? You can train our AI within the software to respond to any and all of those messages. And you can actually put working hours for that bot that can pick up texts and emails from a certain point until you come back into the office. And then you will show us notifications that you texted with a customer. You can review all of that. Everything is tracked in the system. And we're just getting started. The software is the worst it will ever be today. There's a bunch of things we still are looking to do, but you know.
But you feel like it's pretty good to start with, right?
I might not be the best person to ask, but we're doing everything we can to improve that. And then on top of the CRM and the sales piece that we have, we also have a service for virtuals for movers. So for example, if you want to have anybody that performs virtuals on your behalf or 24/7, we are basically available to perform virtuals and send you inventory lists that then you can take over and do the rest of the stuff.
That's awesome. So really excited for you on all this stuff you've got going on. You're growing early and people are clearly taking on to your service. So that's awesome. So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you or Drive Sales on the CRM, surveys, outsourcing their sales department or part of it, how would they go about doing that?
So drivesale.com is the website of the company. You can find me on LinkedIn if you can spell my name. My last name is whatever, kind of familiar with people from the past. I have nothing to do with that. So they can find me on LinkedIn as well. LinkedIn website. They can email me, Milo@drivesales.com directly. So yeah, I'm pretty flexible to get hold of when it comes to making sure that we can get more people on board.
Yeah. So we'll make sure we post up your information at the end here. So, hey, listen, really appreciate your time. Thank you for coming in. Thank you for helping us out, sharing all this information. As always, it's a pleasure talking to you. So thank you for joining
us. Pleasure, Brian. Thank you very much. Appreciate you. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks, man. All right. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Milo. He's got a ton of knowledge. Really great guy. Really appreciate him coming on and taking the time to chat with us. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope it was helpful. I hope you learned something from it. If you want to reach out to Milo or find out more about Drive Sales, you can go to drivesales.com. You can check him out on LinkedIn, or you can send him an email at milo@drivesales.com. Just a reminder to everyone, if you're enjoying this podcast on YouTube, remember it's also everywhere else you would listen to your podcast. So check us out on the non-video versions if you need to do that. If you have any questions or suggestions for future episodes, send us an email at moversresourceguide@gmail.com. Other than that, appreciate everyone listening as always. Thank you for tuning in. Hope you have a great week. Now get moving.